Back episode 177. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. I'm I'm it's staring at the world with just complete wonder. I mean it's just getting so surrealistic, it's hard to really know up from down anymore. It's always good to talk to you though. How are you?
Good, all things considered. Made it through another week almost, we'll see. So interesting developments this week. I heard it saw this headline, Biden, Trump's failure to concede is an embarrassment, but won't hinder transition. President-elect Joe Biden says President Donald Trump's failure to recognize his victory is an embarrassment. None of the votes have been certified, and there's litigation, I think, in at least six states. So,
yeah.
Darn it, I won. Acknowledge me. Of course, he's got the backing of the media. It marked the sharpest critique yet from the incoming president at the incumbent as Trump's team has refused to formally begin preparations for a transition. Apparently, GSA isn't cooperating with any transition plans. And also, Trump has like fired his Secretary of Defense. He's not acting like a lame duck president, so that's interesting. Like some sort of maneuvering behind the scenes. Taking questions from reporters Tuesday for the first time since his victory, I put that in quotation marks, Biden predicted that it will not help the president's legacy. Oh, no. Biden says regardless of Trump's administration's actions, his planning to assume power on January 20th is continuing as scheduled. Interesting, the RNC chair says 11,000 people have come forward with voter fraud claims. I think there are over 200 affidavits, sworn affidavits. So, but I'm hearing there is no evidence of voter fraud. So
Right. Where
is this coming from? Ronna McDaniel, chair of the Republican National Committee, told Fox News commentator Sean Hannity that she has 234 pages containing 500 sworn affidavits, alleging 11,000 incidents of various types of voter fraud. Briefly listing the allegations on Hannity's show, McDaniel said that a person in Wayne County, Michigan, alleged that 60% of a batch of voter ballots had the same signature on them. That another affidavit claimed to have seen 35 ballots counted despite not being cast by registered voters. That 50 ballots were counted multiple times in a tabulation machine elsewhere. So they were recounted over and over again. And that one woman's dead son somehow voted in one election, and that Democrats handed out documents on how to distract Republican vote challengers. So that's a violation of law right there. I heard that some guy 170 years old voted. That was out in Nevada. I guess it must be something in the water out there.
As we discussed last week, the lawsuits are going to have a hard time, particularly over the next week or so, I suspect, because the need to go point by point, person by person, it just takes a long time. And I know a lot of people are disappointed that there hasn't been that kind of smoking gun evidence, but I think that As the data has sort of cleared up, it's more and more clear that something illegal occurred. A state we didn't talk about last week was Wisconsin. They had a 89% turnout. Now, this is quite shocking because they would average over the last like 50 years a 66% turnout.
Yes.
And so you're looking at, you know, what is referred to as like a 5 standard deviation shift from the norm. And then when you dig down into the numbers, you see that 7 districts in Milwaukee alone, there were others, but they reported higher turnouts than registered voters. I mean, they would have like 102, 103%.
Well, they gave 110%, you know, man, that's what you do.
And so this is suspicious.
Yeah.
You also then, as we mentioned last week, you know, there are these vertical line vote dumps where you have.
Yeah, that was Michigan and Wisconsin, neighboring states. Yeah.
Now, Michigan had, they're spectacular, but Wisconsin, they found that there are also just clear cut evidence of it. And you see, all of these things, they actually violate legally what's called Benford's Law. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's just a statistical term, which is in fact something that is admissible in the court. So in other words, if you think there isn't, you know, any real evidence of Biden, or as I call him sort of wittingly, I think, hope, Bedpan, Bedpan's, his, that's Biden, his, the vote is just getting less and less likely to be something that can be accepted. And so when you get into, if this goes through all the way to the Supreme Court, it's really going to be funny, but America will come to know about Benford's Law. This will be, I think, pretty sure, one of the major points of contestation. Mm-hmm. They're gonna say, look, you know, we don't even need to go person by person. We can just show that statistically this is impossible. And it is an example of the what you refer to as the McCarthy principle. Remember the story about the congressman who told Joe McCarthy that it has to be a conspiracy because if it wasn't, we would win one every once in a while.
Oh, it's the Secretary of Defense who.
Yeah. Well, this is the same thing. In other words, all of
James Forrestal. Yeah.
Yeah. All of the violations of Benford's Law, and I've actually tried to go through this as best I can, are all going in one direction. Everything moves in one direction, all toward Biden. So it is. It certainly is something that you can take to a court and expect to win. I mean, this is about as clear of evidence as you possibly can get. But because of the nature of the court system, Tim, it wouldn't surprise me if this fails, which then goes to the point we made last week, which is becoming more and more discussed. As far as I know, I mean, I'm not sure, but to my knowledge, we were the first people to talk about it. Not that this is, you know, particularly important, but it was, you know, obvious to us that the courts are not really needed for Trump to win or to be elected president.
That's just one avenue, yeah.
Yeah, all he actually has to do is just convince the Republican legislatures. And so this evidence, which if you get in front of a Masonic judge, who knows how they would kind of relate to that. But I think it's pretty clear that the Republican legislatures would look at this and go, yep, you know, we were disenfranchised. And so I think digging down even further, I think if Trump can just convince the six legislatures, he doesn't have to convince, you know, 28 or something, just the six that where the fraud occurred, that they need to stand up to, you know, protect the agency of their constituents. Then he's home free, because I think if those six then say, yeah, we're going to vote for Trump because it's just the only honest thing we can do, then I don't think the rest of the Republicans would refuse to go along with that.
Yeah, they seem to have developed a spine, which is interesting.
We'll see how long that lasts.
How long that lasts. I think this week, Fauci says he'll take the new Pfizer vaccine if the FDA approves it. U.S. infectious disease expert Anthony Fauci said he will take Pfizer's Incorporated's new coronavirus vaccine if the Food and Drug Administration approves it, and that he has confidence in the company and in the government agency. Asked on MSNBC if he would take the vaccine, Fauci said, I'm going to look at the data, but I trust Pfizer. I trust the FDA. These are colleagues of mine for decades. the career scientist. And if they look at this data and they say the data is solid, let's go ahead and approve it. I promise you I will take the vaccine, and I will recommend that my family takes the vaccine. You trust them? Do you believe them?
No, this seems preposterous, given that there hasn't been an adequate testing. You know, we talked before we started the show, and we were mentioning Operation Warp Speed, the military rollout of the DNA vaccine. They had a, I believe it was 60-minute interview with the general who's in charge of it. And he says that he is ready, you know, to execute the vaccine program, and that he already has the stockpiles of the vaccine ready to go, which caught the attention of a few alert, you know, viewers, in that they wondered, where did he get these if they haven't actually been approved yet? How could he possibly have over 300 million doses? But he claims to, and he claims that he can, you know, move it at as the program suggests, at warp speed. So it would be kind of interesting if, in the whole chaos of the election, if they actually tried to slip in the vaccine at that point. A little far-fetched, but it is possible. And I do think we have to start, you know, developing strategies as to what we're all going to do if they do decide to, you know, have a radical mandatory vaccine program for the whole world, basically.
Yeah,
but for Americans, they could try this. They are in, they have enough, you know, military and police power. I mean, there would be resistance, of course, enormous resistance, but they could try it. So, one, my question is, well, what do we do between now and then to try to head it off? And then two, if we can't, then how are we going to defend ourselves? I just wanted to give a tip of the hat to the Danes. Denmark had a really draconian, you know, law that they attempted to put into effect or attempted to pass that would have created a, you know, just out and out medical dictatorship. And they were able to defeat it. It was the public took to the streets. They had enormous demonstrations there. And I was shocked, but they actually, it was today, I believe, yeah, they actually defeated it. So it shows you that, you know, there are still some craven politicians out there that we can affect with, you know, with our behavior, with our presence in the streets.
Well, and of course, we hear nothing about this in the United States.
No, not a word.
Yeah, this is our news media, or the network news. It keeps us informed on these things. Yeah. Well, except a lot of these measures, it's because the people just accept at face value, or they don't question the narrative of a pandemic or something, you know, of a threat of a medical emergency when there is none. It's the, you know, it's funny because if you look at the, you know, the office of President-elect Biden, like the pandemic, they're both creations of fraudulent statistics and media hype, and there's nothing really behind it, no reality to it.
Yeah.
But then here, on that theme, of course, Joe Biden is developing his COVID-19 team, the new task force. And it's one of the guys on it is a guy named Dr. Michael Osterholm. He's an epidemiologist, an expert, I guess, a member of Joe Biden's new coronavirus task force. Tuesday warned that the surging coronavirus cases across the country, again, these are positive test results, most of which are probably bogus, given the nature of the PCR test or the testing methods that they have, which are none of them are which are reliable. These surging coronavirus cases across the country are creating a perfect storm. I love the language of these scientists. And Americans shouldn't be surprised when the country hits over 200,000 new cases every day. Of course, the cases are just positive tests. Heard today that the instructions from the CDC for the labs, I guess for the people administering tests, call for over 40 cycles, which is a violation of the PCR test instruction, which is nothing over 35. You get over 35, and Dr. Fauci actually admitted this. The tests are useless because the amplification distorts it so much that it creates virtually all false positives. So this is where they're getting their cases, and all these tests are being run in over 40 cycles. Again, yeah, this is something that's not getting, talked about.
Right, and they're getting their fatalities, I suspect, from flu patients.
Because there's no flu.
Right, they have excluded the flu from their statistical structure.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be considered part of COVID. So they have pretty much made it impossible for the COVID fatalities to not skyrocket here because we're entering into flu season.
Yeah, because what happens is people are always going to be dying, and you're always going to have about 3 million Americans dying a year. So from that, you can always pull, you know, 250,000 and claim it's COVID.
Yeah.
Basically, Dr. Osterholm says, we're going to see by far the darkest days of this pandemic between now and next spring when the vaccine becomes available. Look at this language. This is science? How does he know? Osterholm, yeah. The director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research at the Policy University of Minnesota, let's see if he gets any like Bill Gates funding. Let's track that. Said this on CBS this morning. Well, you know it's because it's CBS News. On Labor Day, we were 32,000 cases a day in this country. Now we're running over 120,000, 130,000 cases a day. Well, how many tests are you running compared to now in April?
Well, but moreover,
I mean, what I mean, jeez.
I mean, look.
No one's.
Why don't we just do like 300 million, instead of giving the vaccines, why don't we just do 300 million tests and then have like 100 million cases and then we have herd immunity.
Herd immunity. Because people aren't dying. And
yeah.
I mean, or even that's sick. They're asymptomatic. How many of these cases people are asymptomatic? And how bad is the disease or the virus that you have to take a test and know that you have it? You know, you're not feeling well. I'm feeling fine. Now look at this test result. You're not feeling well. You're not feeling well. You understand? Now
yeah,
take this shot.
That's one thing that I've mentioned before, that the disease has an incredible negative placebo effect. If you're told you have a positive test, you're very likely to feel just sicker than crap, you know, because it's just, you know, you go, my God, I've got the COVID, you know, will I die? What's going to happen to me? So you feel worse. And since the symptoms that they have are so vague, you know, temperature or chills, you know, cough, things like this. I mean, it's almost impossible not to have them. So this is really mass hysteria, mass propaganda. The number that people really need to pay attention to is just the national mortality averages. Because
mm-hmm.
if they look at that's the number that will keep them from being damaged by the propaganda. I mean, if you look at Europe, in England, then a lot of people have done these studies and they said, look, we've had this epidemic, but our baseline mortality for the months of the epidemic really didn't move much. In the United States, we had a couple months where when they slaughtered all of the people who were inside the retirement homes,
mm-hmm.
you know, Cuomo got them to move all of the infected people out of the hospital. You had an explosion of deaths inside these homes. It had nothing to do with COVID. These were pneumonia, bacterial pneumonia that these people brought from the hospitals. And so in those months, we had an actual increase in our, you know, normal mortality base. But now it's pretty much normal, and it'll stay pretty much normal, I'm sure, unless we have a real bad flu season where we might get a slight hiccup. But nothing to justify, locking us down. And of course, when you look at the statistics now in Europe, where they have, you know, the cases are 10 times what they were back April, March, when this thing began, but the fatalities are 1/10 the amount because they accelerated all the old people dying back then in the same way. Well, now you have to really have this discussion of which is worse, the disease or the lockdown, because we also have statistics now on the destruction of not just lives, you know, but businesses of, you know, economies, psychological damage. So the lockdowns have been studied and have been shown over and over again to be worse than the worst case for the virus. So one only hopes that this clear evidence will just show people that the government is being malevolent, that there's something else other than medical protection that is being offered to you with, you know, with the lockdown.
Yeah, you have these measures in New York. Governor Cuomo is still shutting down restaurants. In North Carolina, Governor Roy Cooper put in place another executive order again. These aren't laws passed to decrease the number of people allowed to indoors from 25 to 10 in the state. Again, this is all a response to test spikes, not increased any deaths or even hospitalizations. So they're still maintaining that claim that they can just cite test results.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like you say, because really the, you know, COVID is this artificial pandemic, and it led directly to Biden's presidency, which is another, you know, just statistical mirage.
Yeah.
It's like because they have the power of the media, they're able to just insert the data that they think is necessary for their version of propaganda. And then at the end of all of this is Operation Warp Speed. And of course, you know, even the name of the thing just makes me cringe. I mean, Warp Speed being, you know, the Star Trek.
Yes, science concept, fiction.
You know, science fiction. And
it should be Operation Warp Reality. That's what it should be.
Yeah, Warp. That's what they should call is Warp Reality, because it's really, if you just stand back and look at it, if they actually try this, I would hope everyone look at the video of the general's interview, because he looks dead serious to me. If they try this, it's going to be just an existential crisis for every American. Really, very, very serious stuff. I mean, I know, you know, I've thought about it, and I know how I'm going to respond. I'm just not going to permit my DNA to be tampered with. That's just my interpretation of the Constitution. I'm not going to be part of, you know, humanity 2.0. I don't want them to, you know, create my genetic material. I just think this is the very idea that this is somehow a constitutional power of our government is just sophistry on a ridiculous level. And so my hope is that the citizens who resist and so violently, that the people who come up with these ideas sitting in the hot tub at Epstein's Island will just suffer too much damage to continue the fight. I mean, it's real. If they do this, if they mandate it, which I think they might, and just say everyone has to take the vaccines, we're going to, you know, come together as a nation, and it's we'll get rid of this and everything go back to normal. Then we're going to have to, you know, make these decisions, because we're going to be taking something that we have no understanding of. I mean, there is what tests of this thing do the public really have access to, right? What do we have in terms of review of the mandated vaccine, right? How would we know what's inside this and what kind of genetic tampering these guys are up to? So if we accept it, you know, we are literally their creation. I mean, they will be creating our genetic material. So these are the same individuals who, you know, sent our grandfathers over the top at the Somme. They're the same ones that, you know, stood on both sides of, you know, the battlefields and just slaughtered us in the millions. They conducted 9/11. I mean, everyone can remember that. These are the people who are creating this this vaccine warp speed project. I mean, we can never forget that. We have to look at every single one of these mass murders and genocides that they have perpetrated against us, and then weigh that and like, oh, well, is this just going to be, you know, like a flu vaccine with no big deal? No, I'm afraid not. This is, they've gone to too much trouble. The fingerprints of really the most important genocidal operation they've ever done, which is going some, Tim, that's going some to say that, because think of the world wars, right? Mm-hmm. Think of what they have done in the past to us. Think of the Holodomor, right? Think of all of the tens of millions of Europeans that they've slaughtered. And now to not use that understanding as a way to look at this as, you know, some as how what we might be facing here. Boy, I just think that'd be really naive.
Well, we are entering into the holiday season. And so just in time for the holidays, the Center for Disease Control released guidelines on Thanksgiving Day gatherings with families. This was the Center for Disease Control and Prevention have released updated guidelines for Thanksgiving celebrations as coronavirus cases once again surge in the United States. Again, cases are just positive tests from a test which is as high as 90% false positive, according to the New York Times. The updated guidelines come as experts say small household gatherings have become an important contributor to the rise of COVID-19 cases. Well, I guess experts claim that. The first act of guidelines released by the agency ranked a number of popular Thanksgiving activities by their level of risk. So here we go. The CDC's updated guidelines include considerations to slow the spread of the virus during small gatherings, but say they are meant to supplement and not replace local health and safety laws and regulations. I just don't think most people are going to be, as they get together for Thanksgiving, are going to be worrying about this. The ones that won't, well, they deserve their fate. Officials say celebrating virtually with members of your own household poses the lowest risk. You can have like Thanksgiving on the internet, I suppose, during our holidays. I'm sure we'll see commercials of that effect. Bringing together family members or friends from different households, including college students returning home, may pose varying levels of risk. You mean that's, yeah, it might bring home a cold. Those organizing and attending holiday gatherings are asked to consider the risk basis on some of the following factors. Community levels of COVID-19, I guess are you in a hot zone? Potential exposure during travel, location of gathering, indoor or outdoor. Duration of gathering, number of people expected to attend, behaviors of attendees prior to gathering, behaviors of attendees during the gathering, you know, ask them what they were doing. People who should not attend, people who have tested positive for COVID-19 or have been exposed to someone who has, should not host or participate in any in-person gathering.
That really sounds like a hell of a party.
Those with symptoms of COVID-19 or waiting for test results should also refrain from attending events. Can you imagine being the brain dead moron actually following these guidelines? The CDC has also included some consideration when it comes to deciding whether or not it may be safe to host an in-person gathering. Hosts are encouraged to check COVID-19 infection rates in the area, and imagine going on the internet and check that, and in areas where the guests may live. My neighborhood, I guess. One thing, you have a temperature gun. You can point people's forehead as they enter your house. Limiting the number of attendees as much as possible and allowing people from different households to social distance at all times is also encouraged. So it gets everyone 6 feet apart in the house. So that makes a lot of sense. Hosting the gathering outdoors rather than indoors. Well, that'll work well in late November in most parts of the country. Maybe you're in Arizona or something. I don't know. So let me see. Yeah, hosting gathering as much as possible. Guests should wear a mask when they aren't eating or drinking. Is also, so you put the mask back on. If you are hosting an indoor gathering, the CDC says to increase ventilation as much as possible by opening windows and doors.
The only gathering I have ever seen that even comes close to all of these requirements was the sex ritual and Eyes Wide Shut that Kubrick did. This is the only one where everyone is 6 feet apart. They're all wearing masks.
They're wearing masks. It's because not all of us live in a Rothschild mansion. So
this is
floor space.
This is you have to really wonder if the people who create these things are just like Saturday Night Live skit writers. In other words, that they're just trying to come up with absurd concepts, because this is part of the destruction of our ability to think clearly, is to have rules which are incoherent. And so I mean, this is a whole collection of rules, which are all completely incoherent, that have absolutely nothing of science in back of them. And the idea of bringing that incoherent authoritarian perspective into a gathering at Thanksgiving, are you kidding me? I mean, this would be something that they might try reasonably after the vaccine has changed our genetic materials and we're epsilons and deltas. But I mean, literally, you know, you wonder, is there going to be anyone stupid enough and just brain dead enough to do it? And, you know, I hate to say it, but I think I've actually met people this last week. I've had a number of really strange encounters. And it's interesting, they're left wing, they're mask wearing, and they are terrified of Corona or COVID.
Yeah,
when I try to get them to look at a few numbers, I mean, literally one of them put her mask back on rather aggressively, glared at me through her little beady eyes, and then said, "You're sounding like Trump."
Well, that's it. See, there you go.
And I thought, God, you know, this is really amazing kind of propaganda control that these people have. I mean, there's not, you know, someone, this is not someone I dislike, someone I was actually being very sincere. And so when you have experiences like that, you think, well, maybe they actually will sit there with their guidelines and arrange the tables. And I mean, it doesn't seem possible to me that anyone would even consider this as reasonable. And the reason I, you know, go into this long-winded kind of description is because I'm hoping that the fact that it is ridiculous will be something that people become aware of, that we're not dealing with serious medical practitioners here. We're dealing with evil propaganda, you know, kind of magicians that are trying to get into our heads and just make us brain dead in preparation for Operation Warp Speed, accepting of, you know, the Humanity 2.0 vaccinations.
Here's guests are encouraged to have a plan for storing their mask while eating and drinking. One person who is wearing a mask should handle serving shareable items and be the only one handling those serving utensils.
God almighty.
As always, everyone is asked to wash their hands with soap and water for 20 seconds or use hand sanitizer before and after preparing, serving, and eating food.
yeah.
I think I'll stop reading that.
It's mind-boggling that this – but again, I just hope that the right response is that it's just – this is an obvious example of malevolence. Not possible. Not possible. This is – sincere, you know, it's not people trying to help you.
This is the CDC, and this point says, wait, this is the agency relying to provide guidance on public health measures, and this is ridiculous, this is asinine. And so, why should we listen to anything? I mean, it's absolutely absurd. Then there's also less than half of Americans likely to comply with new COVID lockdown, according to Gallup. I'm not sure what that means because of the polling. But I mean, earlier we featured, this is on the, where is this? Where are we here? Yeah, here we go. Americans are less likely to comply with another coronavirus lockdown than they were in the spring, with fewer than half saying they, in a new poll, that they are very likely to stay home this time around, according to the new Gallup poll, released as record numbers of cases skyrocket nationwide. Skyrocketing. In the poll taken between October 19th and November 1st, 49% of respondents said they'll be very likely to stay at home for a month if it's recommended after the outbreak. Imagine that. Communities. This is down from 67% in the spring. It was that high? You know, they wouldn't stay. Well, another 18% said they were somewhat likely to comply, but a third said they are not likely to obey lockdown orders. So that's quite a defection. Yeah. I mean, Republicans, of course, are less likely to comply than Democrats. More people said that they feel confident in their ability to keep from getting infected, with 82% saying they are sure of their ability to stay well compared to 64% in March.
You know, I mean, again, the horror porn is wearing off because remember back in March, they had the pictures of the dead Chinese that didn't even make it into the emergency room, all lying their face down, you know, and the guys in the hazmat suits. And people really thought this could be, and how could they think otherwise? They thought this was going to be just a, you know, like a zombie movie, and that half of mankind would be killed. And now here we are, what, 7 months later, still locked down. But if people are aware that if we hadn't been told that the pandemic existed, that we wouldn't even know about it. I mean, in my county, which is like 880,000 people, there have been 132 deaths, and all of them have been comorbid. Everyone.
Not counting the empty chairs at your dinner table at night?
Yeah, no, I mean, empty. I mean, I wish they were empty. You know, I've got my family members, and I'll tell you, after a couple of drinks, I can't get them to put their masks on. You know, so it's like we're really struggling here. But anyway, so but the point is that the pandemic is so ridiculous that if they didn't tell us about it, if they didn't keep the horror porn going with all the lockdown, the little details and the cases. No one would know. No one could possibly go, gee, there's been a lot of deaths here in Santa Barbara. There hasn't been. 132, there's 880,000 people. There's all of these people were old. In the 2018, you know, kind of flu season, we were losing 8 people a week. Mm-hmm. So this is nothing unusual at all. There, no one would think of it as an epidemic. And therefore, my point is that when people say they're less likely to stay at home, of course they are. They're going to have to try to ratchet up the horror porn, all the legal consequences of movement, because at least where I live, I mean, everyone is just, they think that, frankly, most people think it is ridiculous. There are some, like the people that I was trying to reach, you know, just in conversation this last week, there are some that are zealots. They appear to be, I don't know if this is true in where you are, but they're more likely to be far left wing kind of cultural Marxist oriented people. You know, I stand with Fauci. I stand with the government, you know, so.
Yeah. These weird like yard signs, like he's Fauci.
Yeah.
It's strange, but those are the office only, or something.
Yeah. They're the only people that are taking this thing seriously. If you go down to the beach, no one is running around frightened at all, you know? So yeah, that doesn't surprise me. But that, which means of course they're going to have to do something. They can't permit, you know, the lockdown to be half as physically onerous. In other words, people are just moving, doing their normal stuff, because that would expose it too clearly as a fraud. So I think what do you think you're going to do? Will they try, you know, like fines and things? If you know, they may try to lock us down like they did in Melbourne, where you have to stay in the house except for 1 hour a day, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can't dismiss any of that, the possibility, because with the stakes are so high in this, you know.
Yeah.
So they got to pull, you know, this can't let it take its natural course, because the natural course is it for it to wear off and life to go back to normal. They got to keep it from being normal. As you know, you know, it's like they got to constantly try to keep things being abnormal, being normal.
Yeah, the interviewer the guy was talking to the general of Operation Warp Speed. He made an editorial statement. He said, you know, for us to get back to anything like normal, we're going to have this vaccine. And then this is sophistry. I mean,
yeah.
Look, all we have to do to get back to normal is have the malevolent government end the lockdown.
Yeah, it's the containment measures. It's not the virus is doing it.
It's not the virus that is created. They always try to do that. They always try to do this little, you know, kind of confusion game propaganda where they talk about getting back to normal and they're blaming the virus as the cause of us not having normality. When the fact is, we'd be perfectly normal if they just let our businesses open up again, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's what we have to do, is in order to get back to normal, we have to switch out this government. We have to switch out the Masonic cesspool government.
Well, it's like the residents of Dresden blaming the firebombing their city on a heat wave.
Exactly.
No, what's this, the natural occurrence? No, it's well, tonight our main topic, we decided to talk about the ongoing election controversy, and perhaps it's part of a larger plan to stoke a civil war, you know. And of course, it appears this was, of course, pushed along by the COVID-driven mail-in balloting, and this, you know, its institution facilitated the massive voting fraud that has apparently occurred and delivered the presidency to Biden, according to the mainstream press. Then this also brings up the issue of kind of a fake reality of the great pandemic that never was. You know, of course, the bogus polling numbers to create sort of a fait accompli and expected Biden's landslide, which didn't occur. Then, of course, Biden wins, which hasn't occurred yet. Of course, those questioning the integrity of this obvious fraudulent election are now being accused of denialism. They're being called crazy conspiracy theorists, the same way that those who look askance and say climate change or the COVID denial, even the Holocaust denial. We hear that denial, 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 as if it's somehow, you know, shows that you're crazy if you don't immediately accept the official narrative unconditionally. Now, of course, going to the election. Start off with that. The changing vote counts after the election, of course, raised significant legal and, you know, constitutional concerns. President Trump has every legal and constitutional he has the right to pretty much exhaust every legal and constitutional remedy he has to right the wrong here. And if he does indeed believe his rhetoric, I think you are there. What he's making, the claims he's making, are backed up by a lot of evidence. They're substantial. He's a duty to pursue it, to vindicate the voters that were indeed disenfranchised by this apparent multi-state voting vote counting fraud operation. But nevertheless, the media, including social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook, are inaccurately labeling Biden as a president-elect. There's no official position. Biden has not been elected by the Electoral College yet. That could get very interesting, I'm sure we'll discuss. So there's no official source or claim for that election claim. The federal law and the Constitution limit that role to the Electoral College and ultimately Congress that accepts the slate of electors. So the Constitution does not give the media the ability to declare the winner despite the claims of the New York Times. But nevertheless, there was concern about chaos and increased risk of fraud from this massive mail-in voting campaign or it was instituted. I think over 100 million ballots were cast. I think that's like a 30 times increase from previous elections. I think 353 counties had 1.8 million more registered voters than eligible voters. Voting age citizens. In other words, registration rates in those counties exceeded the eligible voters. So there's obviously fraud there. Of course, we have a situation now where multiple states are counting presidential votes for days after the election, and it raises significant concerns about the validity of the election because federal law clearly says the presidential contest is supposed to be decided by election day. And of course, on election day, President Trump had the votes to win the presidency. It was after Election Day that the votes magically showed up. Now, the state legislatures in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Arizona have the constitutional authority to resolve this presidential election debacle. They can simply announce that they are going to appoint their own slate of electors, clean electors, because the voting sample that they have now is simply too tainted to be trusted. So that's the controversy with the election. Now, there's been some talk about, well, it's clearly there's sort of ballot harvesting or ballot dump that occurred in the wee early hours of November 4th. And we were talking earlier about the spikes, you know, the anomalies in Michigan and Wisconsin, how somehow Biden was able to turn a 700,000 vote deficit in a battleground state like Pennsylvania, which is leaning towards Trump, and turn it into a victory. The same problems down in Georgia. So, without getting into the details, there are recounts being ordered. There's what I consider a fraudulent recount being done in Georgia now. But there's also some evidence of of a digital manipulation. This leaked story about the hammer and scorecard program. You heard about that?
Yeah.
And that's CIA. Yeah, I love that. They created it to manipulate elections overseas. Oh, now they've applied it domestically.
I actually would know how to, well, I'm not sure. I would know at least in theory how to do that in terms of the code that you'd have to write, where you just have a little kind of algorithm you'd put in an unobtrusive way that would subtract from one column and put it in the other. Mm-hmm. It's really not very difficult. And when you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of votes, you know, it'd be, if you did it a little bit at a time, I mean, some of the tricks that they used were they would, and that identify them as fake ballots is that you wouldn't have any kind of down ballot activity. You'd just have, you know, for example, they have 49,000 votes for Republican and down ballot. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin, and none of those votes have chose a presidential. And again, this is just statistically almost, you know, unheard of. At the same time, they had 64,000 votes for Biden that had no votes for any down ticket Democratic candidate. You see what I mean? So, mm-hmm. I suspect that if these are probably real people who just typically never vote. They would have, you know, they would have them as a real being. They would know them. They have them registered, but they never vote. And so these individuals then they could pick from to create these statistical relationships. And in some cases, you might even want to throw some Republicans in to make it look believable. But you'd, of course, not have them vote for a president. You know, these are the kinds of tricks that are going on here. And because these are real humans, or at least, you know, one would imagine that they would easily be able to do this out of the people who would not vote, who they have in these huge computer lists. It's going to be very difficult to do that kind of physical tracing of every single, you know, calling every, did you vote? Who did you vote for these things? I mean, as if you'd even get good information, you know, in that instance. It's much cleaner, in my mind, much better evidence to just use these broad statistical realities and then take them to an adjudicator that has some brain power.
Yeah.
And then, look, it's just, you know, I'm sorry, you know, there's going to be civil war, but that's just what we have. This is fraud. There's no other way. You've got, when you're five standard deviations from typical, you know, and just think of how all of the presidential races are so predictable that the whole, you know, I mean, literally they're just like, you know, they are just like atomic activity. They're just so predictable. I mean, so in this case, you've had just in all of these Democratic ways and ways which, you know, support Biden, you've had all of these five standard deviation activity. And so what I would hope they would do if Trump really is defending the Constitution is take it to the American people, explain what he's doing, explain that the fraud, you know, is absolutely clear. He doesn't have to go, you know, voter to voter. He can just say, look, these are statistically impossible. I was elected. And I'm asking the House legislatures to put in my electors for me. And if Pelosi tries to block him, we're going to go straight to the Supreme Court, and I'm sure that their justice will prevail, and I will remain as president. I don't know, because as you know, I kind of believe this is more of a pageant and perhaps one that is just setting up civil war. I don't know if you caught it, but one of Trump's legal teams was cancel cultured. Some group got a hold of all of the people who were in the firm, this Project Lincoln, and they posted it online, and they had lots of people basically attack the individual attorneys, and so they frightened the law firm. I guess in some cases they were actually physically, you know, threatening these guys. And so they just said, well, we're not interested in doing this anymore. We don't want to get killed. And so this was a successful cancel culture, you know. But moreover, you can see how a civil war might actually, you know, we do have kind of the rough outline of a civil war. I was very impressed with the Michigan Attorney General, Dana Nessel. She made the claim that the motivating force here is racism. She said that the lawsuits surrender around the notion that black people are to blame for the voter fraud. Now, this is, of course, preposterous, right? Because I can assure you that the black people of, you know, like Milwaukee or Detroit didn't get together and vote to create computer algorithms to, like,
no.
Vote. So
they didn't develop hammer and scorecard. No,
right,
no.
Exactly. Yeah, so this wasn't their project, but nevertheless. So what she said was, really the themes that we see that persist are this: black people are corrupt, black people are incompetent, and black people can't be trusted. And then she went on. This actually made me laugh. She goes, Nessel's proof to back up her claims that Trump's lawsuits are racist is because they're focused on Detroit rather than other counties in the state. She says this is because Detroit has more black residents. I mean, yeah, it's
can you say chutzpah?
I mean, pretty amazing. Now, who is Nessel? Well, she is a George Soros.
Yes.
AG, and she has quite the bona fides. She is the second openly gay person elected to the statewide office, and she is the first Jew elected Attorney General of Michigan. So this is who she is. Soros funding all the way through, and now she is there making the statement that, which will certainly, one would imagine, create ire in blacks, right? I mean, why would you make a statement like this? Why would you make a statement like, you know, Trump's lawsuits are focused in Detroit? I mean, of course they're focused in Detroit. This is where the anomalies occur. But to try to switch it to, you know, well, it's because he doesn't like black, or black people are corrupt, black people are incompetent, black people can't be trusted. This is just being done to stoke the fires, right?
So should they be focused where there weren't trouble?
Right.
Problems with the voting?
Right. And so I would hope
that... Well, it's so irrational. I mean, it just goes to prove that maybe...
It's just crazy. But, yeah. But I would hope that this is so stupid that it actually will backfire, and that blacks will see that they're being pranked here. I mean, I don't know. I've been trying to have some contact with them. I haven't been successful.
Well,
but
so stupid, she should be forced to resign, because someone with that type of thought process or cynicism, if you will, shouldn't be entrusted with a position of attorney general.
Yeah, I mean, this is just, I mean, what she's trying to do is create a civil war.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one thing you can see that is to her advantage for some reason, we can speculate, as to create a civil war, because
just like with Alexander Ocasio-Cortez saying that you have to develop an enemies list of you know, of Trump supporters, so they can be retribution after Trump is gone. Someone like that should be expelled from Congress, just for suggesting that. You know,
of course. I mean, it's promoting violence, and of course, it is as fascist a statement as one could even imagine. You know, the idea that, you know, we can't support people that, you know, In any way we like, that we want to have elected without going on an enemies list. I mean, well, that's pretty much the end of America. So America is in pretty bad shape at this point. The Trump's lawsuits, I don't really think, I would doubt if they can actually turn around the votes. I think they'll be so.
I think the best case is in Pennsylvania.
I think in Pennsylvania they might, and
there's
also
a flagrant violation of the law there, and also a usurpation legislative prerogative.
But just remember that in those states you have Masonic cesspool state supreme courts. And,
yeah, but they're going to the Supreme Court.
But now the question is: will the will the U.S. Supreme Court want to overrule these state issues? And because it's so complicated and there's so little time to make a decision, and it's imaginable that they will just say, look, we're just going to back the state Supreme Court in this because we just can't make any sense. Believe me, I don't have any special insight into this. I'm just saying, to me, this seems possible. And so if I was Trump, I wouldn't bother with it because that process is not one you can really control.
Well, the thing is, you can build the case for fraud, which builds the political case for the state legislatures just to appoint
exactly.
a clean slate.
Exactly. What he should be doing right now is just forget all the legal thing is fine. Nothing wrong with it. But he should be just as we said last week, he should be focused on the state legislatures. He should be building the case so that every single Republican in those state legislatures knows the truth about how the fraud had taken place.
Well, it appears it's headed in that direction because Nancy Pelosi appeared very nervous today with her scarf over her face, claiming that she, if that is indeed what happens, she would refuse to allow the Republicans in to vote on the accepting the electors, which I don't know if she has the power to do that or not.
She would have the power for 1 hour.
Yeah.
Because the Republicans would immediately go to the Supreme Court and demand that the Constitution be processed. But
because
she would have the power to stop it.
The legislatures have plenary authority. I know it's a big word. Nancy can look it up and see what it means. That's the whole point. And that's a remedy for this. And obviously, the Democrats, I think, are coming to the conclusion that there is a growing awareness just outside Trump's base, but just the wider electorate, this election has been stolen. And this gets into maybe our other topic is the media's role in this and perpetrating this fraud, this pageant, if you will, is despite all these problems that everyone's talking about, the media isn't talking about it. There's silence. All they're speculating on the Biden administration, what type of dresses First Lady Jill Biden's going to wear, who's going to be in his cabinet, who's going to be on his task force, who's congratulating him, and they're not talking about who isn't congratulating him, and they're not dealing with the big issue, which is a massive election fraud, multi-state. Now, if the press were free. At the very least, you'd think that this story of a multi-pronged election fraud effort using a CIA program, Hammer and Scorecard, ballot dumping, coordinating with the polling agencies to misrepresent the situation, that's a big story. But the press is just ignoring all this, and they're going on with the fluff of the transition, and that tells you just how the problem is the press itself. The reason why the press isn't covering the election fraud, the attempted steal, if you will, is because they're part of the operation. They're all part of it. That's why they're not covering it. And now they can't go back and step it back and go, there is an attempt, because a real investigation would reveal their role. Like the people in the decision desk at the various networks who coordinated calling certain states in an effort to suppress elections. Or the fact that they're complicit in the whole COVID scamdemic thing to suppress the vote, to make people fearful of going out and voting. That's not voter suppression, I guess, in order to bring about this massive mail-in voting campaign where people receive mail-in ballots unsolicited. But again, the same way they're creating this fake environment, this mirage of the inevitability of a Biden presidency, when indeed it's very much in doubt. In fact, at this point, I think it's as much in doubt as it was on the morning of November 3rd, as it is today, what we're looking at. If the Republicans want to press this, that's the big if. But if you look at the political order of battle, all the Trump cards, if you will, the Republicans have, because they enjoy broad political majority power still. And they can, even if it went to the House of Representatives, it would go to the Republicans, because the Republicans control the majority of congressional delegations. Because
if Trump has made the clear case,
he
needs to make that case. He needs to make it to the public, and he also needs to make it private to the legislature, both the Congress and of course in the states. But I'll tell you, Tim, when I saw Pelosi, her concern over this possibility, That was the first time I actually thought it might happen.
Yes. The fact that she's voicing concern over it.
Yeah, I
said, and the fact that everyone's telling Trump, everyone in the media is telling Trump to concede means that he shouldn't.
Of course.
I mean, it's obvious.
But when Pelosi made the, you know, how she was, you know, just going to dig her heels in and not seat anybody and just prevent it from occurring, that actually made me believe that in this theatrical production we call the presidential election, that this may be one of the ways that, you know, the drama has moved forward, is mm-hmm. that Trump may do this. I mean, he certainly in reality is required to do it. And getting back to the media, I mean, Tim, I don't think they would ever have done A without having B. In other words, they couldn't try this fraud at this scale if they didn't control the media.
Yeah.
I mean, they had to have that, which is why the media has been so, you know, instrumental and consistent in support of it. And I also think they had to realize that or believe that they had some control in the terms of the judicial system. I think that they thought in most of these states they would have some way to influence the state Supreme Court, so that then it would be just too difficult for the Republicans to take, you know, try to overturn six state Supreme Courts, because it would just, the optics would be bad. I mean, that would be just my idea of how they thought they could control it. But unfortunately, there's this other avenue, which is the best one to take, would be so good for the country because it would restore states' rights, you see. It would be good for democracy. And it's not one that they can actually control. And so, you know, as we mentioned last week, this is the path Trump should be working. And I was really happy, because I think this would be a fantasy, you know, if it came about, that this seems to be, you know, it seems to be in the works, because judging by Pelosi's countenance, she looked nervous to me in terms of the drama. I mean, it looked as though the way she was behaving, like you pointed out, was strange. And so it looked like she had, you know, she was manifesting the idea that this is a real threat.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, what's the question? What's really going on here? Is this an attempt to sort of stoke a civil war? Because by creating an election dispute and then perpetrating this multi-state vote counting fraud in such a kind of a crude, obvious fashion, and then having the media kind of pretend, like the mainstream media rather, pretending that it simply isn't happening, no evidence, even though, again, there's lots of evidence, 11,000 witnesses, 500 affidavits, just as you point to the statistical anomalies in and of itself, the chances of these numbers switching the way they did, and this media pretending like it doesn't happen. They always pretend like there's no election fraud, even though it's a time-honored American tradition. Then they announce Biden's victory. They've dumped Trump, and you have this celebration out there. We've had a summer of protests, city burning, of mostly peaceful protests. And we have a summer where the media have reported these things as mostly peaceful as cities burned and were looted. So we have that again. They've created a sort of a very volatile situation, because if Trump is successful in reversing the media's decision, remember, there's no reversal here, by the way. It's the process working out, because just because Fox News or CBS News, the New York Times, or the AP, or Mad Magazine announces that Trump is president, doesn't mean that he's president. They have about as much as I have the same amount of authority as they do. They're just the press, right? So they have, so for some reason, they still have prestige or sway in public opinion. It's probably because they're able to put on pageantry and propaganda. So there is no reversal, but in the minds of many people, it would be a reversal. Because, darn it, we celebrated. We didn't even wear masks when we celebrated, and we didn't practice social distancing, but we celebrated. And now they're telling us Biden isn't elected president. I've seen Biden there with the, put there on the podium with the office of the president-elect. He has to be office of the president-elect. That didn't exist till Obama was elected in 2008, by the way. So it's all, again, show. There's no official office of the president-elect. But people, again, are seeing the media image. So it's the role of the media in creating this idea in the public mind that Biden is the elected president, even though he hasn't, the no vote's been certified, and there's also much controversy about how the votes will eventually be certified, or whether or not the votes will just be tossed out, and the Electoral College will decide this in the way that we're discussing. But they've created a very volatile situation. This goes to the question whether or not this whole operation is kind of a part of a color revolution. I'm talking about first, you know, the impeachment process, the impeachment, failed impeachment, and then you had the fake pandemic, the riots in the summer, and then you have, you know, the fake polling showing a clear Biden victory, didn't manifest itself on election day, had quite the opposite. He had negative coattails. And then Biden's fake victory with a manipulated vote count. This sort of discredits the entire system. It polarizes the political process. And you had this outfit called the Transition Integrity Project. Rosa Brooks, I think, was the founder of it. This too is Soros funded. So once again, we have a malevolent billionaire coming in, injecting his money, his influence into the election, into the electoral process. And the, of course, the Transition Integrity Project sort of planned, wargamed the chaos. And they had, one of the scenarios was this very scenario where Trump doesn't leave despite an election result. There's controversy. And this is something they anticipated. And they even wargamed, you know, sort of getting rid of Trump supporters, retribution, calling, this is the very thing that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is talking about. It's what Robert Reich was talking about. It's what Jill Lockhart was talking about. So they're following this game plan. And so it isn't just, again, it's a little curious that the very thing would happen would be the very scenario that this outfit, this Soros-funded outfit created just over, I think it was created over the summer, actually has come to be. Because, well, they were predicting the future. They were part of the operation. The operation was made for this very outcome that we're seeing now.
Yeah. It's exactly right. And I think that just to extend the logic of what's been achieved, what's going on is the middle class will be extremely angry with Trump, you know, not being president. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, and if he decides to supersede the, you know, the fraudulent election, then the Antifa will have a perfect rationale for massive, violent street war, civil war, basically, which, you know, all of these other statements, the ones you've made, are all just a piece of. They're creating the rationale for what I call the fentanyl brigade to just go into the middle class enclaves and really do some violence. Now, what is the purpose of this? Well, this will create a tremendous distraction from Operation Warp Speed, because it'll be at this point, I think, that the corona case epidemic will crest, and they will, whoever is president will, you know, will have the capacity, will, in the chaos, they will be able to get more Americans, I think, to buy into it as something that's, you know, reasonable. I know this is kind of far-fetched. I'm just making conjectures, but that is what I'm afraid of. I'm really, I'm more afraid of the vaccine in terms of damaging the Europeans and America than I am the result of the election. I think whoever is in the presidency, I mean, Trump, even though he talked a good game from time to time, didn't really stop the lockdown.
No, he signed the emergency, declared the emergency, and he could have stopped the lockdowns in all 50 states, in an evening if he wanted to.
He could have ended it. So my point is, I don't trust him, and I think that that what I'm afraid of is that all of this is just an orchestration to create a psychological point in time where the American people are so upside down that they don't have their wits about them when Operation Warp Speed comes to their home.
Well, we don't know how the elite, you know, the malevolent elite who are doing this, going to react to this, because, I mean, on one hand, you can look at the Biden-Harris administration. He's, you know, progressively sinking into dementia. and he won't serve out, you know, probably the first year of his term, and they have a President Harris, then who does she appoint as vice president? And so then you have a situation, you know, and so what's happening there? And of course, he's talking about national mask mandates, working with the governors, and accelerating all this stuff. Now, that's what he's saying. And then, you know, he's has Zeke Emanuel as his chief COVID advisor, this sort of this genocidal Jew. Who,
yeah, he's the brother of Rahm
Emanuel. That, you know, who, by the way, you can see him on ABC News this week back in March, salivating, talking about how the impending lockdown will prevent Trump from campaigning the way he does with big rallies. You know, but Zeke Emanuel actually says that people should live past the age of 75. Of course, Joe Biden is approaching 78.
So. And not in particularly good shape either. I mean, if you want to make a rationale for euthanasia, I mean, you probably want to start with Joe.
Well, I heard him in a speech. He literally said he wants, as president, he would lead the charge for international hub-da-ba-ba.
Yeah, he's, you know, it's
hub-da-ba-ba-ba.
Just.
Because his voice is, and it's kind of sad. I'm making fun of it. It's elder.
I know. I shouldn't mock him because I'm well on my way to. Yeah.
But
to
he shouldn't be put up there. This obviously, you know, if he were resting at home, sitting in, if he were resting, and not, he might be better. I mean, he might have more of his mind together. He's being exhausted, so it's a hell of a strain.
Oh, that's right. No, of course, it's just preposterous that he would even want to be president. So obviously, it's just the whole thing is just a. You know, it's a theatrical production. I think his dementia is actually a component in the propaganda. You know, it's like because it makes the whole process of politics ridiculous. I mean, this is really one of the kind of subtle side effects of all this is, you know, if, for example, Trump loses and then Biden wins, you've really delivered a blow to the European middle class in terms of belief in the power of democracy in America, because you not only had an election stolen, but you ended up with someone who is simply senile.
Well, I mean, this goes to that technocratic agenda, which is like rule the technocrats. You can't rely on normal political process or politicians. No one's trustworthy. It's just a nettle, so you might as well just give up and just. Submit to the technocratic control group.
Have despair, and if you want to get back to normal, the vaccine is always available. And so this is what I'm really afraid that there's a broad orchestration that facilitates Operation Warp Speed with the Humanity 2.0 vaccine. If that is the case, we really need to, you know, think on our feet and kind of organize ourselves better in terms of resistance. I you know, looking at some of the stats, there was an article, I think, with the Washington Post about how the anti-vax conspiracy theorists are incredibly growing and becoming more popular. They brought back Peter Hotez, you recall, the demented and 100% evil, you know, physician who's never seen a vaccine. He didn't want to give to you. And he was, you know, he calls, you know, he basically says the people who are opposing the vaccines are mentally ill and need to be vaccinated, you know, just by force, by mandate. So that suggested to me that the, you know, anti-vax movement is really having a good effect. I've seen different stats on this, but I haven't seen any polls less than 50% in the United States, and even more so in most of the European countries. So there's a real achievement of the independent media. I mean, this would not have existed without the independent media. 20 years ago, it would have been 99%. So this is an example of what we can achieve. The people are really worried about vaccines because we have been able to show them that, one, they're not effective, and two, they're dangerous. And I think if they do mandatory vaccination of genetical, you know, modification, I'm pretty sure you'll have mass violence. And I think that would bring the project to an end. I mean, I don't know what it would be, Tim, to stop it, but I think several thousand, you know, people who are trying to force their way into someone's home to vaccinate people. I think if they had that many casualties, I think it would you'd have be so much publicity that it would just I just can't imagine it would go forward. I think on the other hand, what is more likely is they'll just try to nuisance you into taking the vaccine.
Well, that's what it tends to. That you in order to get on a flight, you got to take a
exactly.
vaccine. You
yeah,
got to
they
have
are
a health pass.
Ticketmaster,
yeah.
If you want to see AC/DC,
yeah.
you have to have a vaccination.
Yeah, which is if you just thought about this, well, no, it's absurd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and
but
again, all this over what?
Yeah, 99.9%.
You know, take us back to the original narrative. Yeah.
And the 1% is like old people, none of who go to AC/DC concerts anyway.
Well,
so
I think AC/DC, they're old enough now to.
That's right. I think one of them has dementia.
Yeah.
You know, oddly enough. But anyway, so they're a good example. But anyway, my point is that yeah, that's you can see Ticketmaster's position is how they're going to just nuisance Americans into doing it. But you know something, I don't think it's going to work. I mean, the people that I know that are opposed to vaccinations and opposed to mandatory vaccinations, they will change their behavior. They do not want it. You know, there's a lot of grit in this particular issue. So we'll see, but I think
it's a lot
that,
different than putting on a mask, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. A mask is one thing, but changing your genetic material is another.
Well, I think hopefully what we're seeing in all these instances with the election, and of course with the Great Reset, is they've overplayed their hand.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Yeah, and particularly with the election, I think people are really. I mean, no one's believing it. If you watch the media, like I said, I was talking to a friend, and he's talking about what they're saying. The media says, you probably just watch too much TV. That's why you're not why you're despondent because you're watching TV. It just seems. But if you turn the box off and you just observe reality, everything looks different. That's one of the things you notice.
Well, for one thing, the epidemic goes away immediately.
Yeah.
The movie doesn't even exist anymore. So it's they've overplayed their hand. The virus is so clever in so many ways, you know, with the social distancing and no ability to assemble, you know, can't talk to each
mm-hmm.
other. They worked out all these details to affect a slave state. But at the same time, it just isn't very believable. And there's too much now independent media chatter about, there's no, you know, the fatality level isn't high enough to really justify the lockdown. So they overplayed their hand. And this, I think, has accelerated the waking up process that the independent media has been responsible for. And it's kind of we're really coming, Tim, to a crossroads very shortly. Very shortly. They've accelerated the process of the creation of the epsilons and the deltas, right? They've got a genetically changing vaccine. They've locked us down. And they have very weak rationales for both. At the same time, because of the, you know, of the how terrible the lockdown is and how weak the rationale is, the independent media has raised its voice to the loudest it's ever been. More and more people are starting to worry about it. These two forces cannot exist simultaneously for very long. I mean, something is going to give here pretty quick. I mean, I don't know what percentage of the population has to be aware of the secret society before they stop being able to program us at all. I mean, once the propaganda, I mean, just think about the propaganda has to exist every single day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can never stop. Once they started to affect our minds, you know, back in the 18th century, to this day, they have to go every single day. Because if one day it is exposed, the next day is a worldwide revolution. They have to always keep it in place. But it cannot be kept in place. It just isn't. The independent media is becoming too powerful. There's just too many people with different theories, of course, but there are just too many people that are not allowing themselves to be subjected to the propaganda. I don't know, Tim. This is just going to be the most interesting couple of years imaginable. I don't know which what to say. You know, it's we just have to fight as hard as we can because this is our time to actually make a difference.
Well, if it is following a pattern, like another regime change or color revolutions in other countries, where you delegitimize an elected government, you manipulate an election, you claim that the government, you know, the strongman won't step down despite a democratic election. There's protests and then there's violence, and lo and behold, people are shot and they blame the government. Now, maybe something like that will happen in the next few weeks as this plays out and Trump pushes his case, and if it becomes clearer to the Democrats that Biden is not going to become president, who knows what to expect, what they might pull, right? I mean,
they have to go to civil war. I mean, yeah. What can they do? They can't. Are they just going to accept the idea of being exposed? They're going to say, yeah, we did it.
That's another thing is if they get rebuked and it's an admission.
Right.
I mean, they it's almost like, you know, when you try to, if you're going to attempt to assassinate the king, you better succeed.
This is exactly like that. This is exactly like that. They have attempted to assassinate the king and they cannot fail. So there isn't any, there's no wiggle room here. If Trump succeeds in that maneuver, they will have to fight it in the same way that Trump would have to fight their maneuver.
Yeah.
Which is to say, you know, they'll try to go to the army, or I mean, who knows, but they will definitely try to prevent it with force.
Well, it was interesting that he fired the Secretary Esper. He fired
him. Yeah, that was fast.
It's not something that a lame duck president does. It's not, this isn't something that he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't plan, and then Pompeo's remark about transitioning to the second Trump administration will be rather smooth. So there's something going on there. You hear John Brennan on CNN saying that Trump should be removed prior to January 20th because the risk he might release documents, he might show us where some of the bodies are buried. As another Trump card that Trump has. Is he can declassify some material, and that might be a sort of a negotiating thing that Trump has within the deep state that of course you don't talk about. But John Brennan, the former CIA director, claiming that Trump poses such a threat to national security that he should be removed prior to January 20th.
Yeah, I mean, and
he can't wait to January 20th.
Right. And if you consider the gravitas of the personalities who are like in play here, who are making just bizarre unconstitutional proclamations, you can see that
I mean, think about it. He's suggesting removing Trump before January 20th. If that's the case, why should Trump step aside on January 20th?
Well,
right, what's the legitimacy?
Why wouldn't the president say this is sedition?
Yeah.
Ordered him arrested, and the trial starts this afternoon, and we expect him to be hanging from a gallows by dinner.
Well, the argument of sedition and subversion—that's something we've been talking about for several months here. Is the reality is that many people within the government, the FBI, CIA, and also the media, and also have been involved in this operation when they supported things like Antifa and Black Lives Matter. That's not the free press. They represent corporate interests who are actively involved in the color revolution because this ties into the objectives of the Great Reset, which is the destruction of national sovereignty and also the immiseration and impoverishment of all of humanity under the guise of a new normal. And we've talked about how this whole thing, you could investigate, convene a panel grand jury, start a criminal investigation, congressional investigations into this network, this conspiracy, if you will, of this entire operation. It's a great pandemic, the instability that occurred, the fact that it was well known that groups like BLM and Antifa are terrorist organization, criminal organization, multi-state organizations, operating interstate, getting lavish with funds from foundations and corporations. You could file a RICO case against that, impound those funds, seize those assets, and prosecute those involved in it all the way up the ladder.
Of course, and it's obvious that the European middle class is becoming familiar with these concepts, right?
Yes.
This is self-evident is that these ideas are starting to circulate and becoming seemingly coherent now to more and more people. So this is why there has to be a dramatic conclusion. This is why, as I look at these forces, we are headed right for a car wreck of some kind, because if Trump retains his office, the middle class will demand that process. There's just no way around it, because he will have to expose the fraud, and he can't just stop it at, you know, well, these people, you know, jimmied with the computer. No, it's going to have to expose the media. And as soon as that starts, then the whole American fictional reality will just...
Well, supposedly there's a Justice Department investigation, and there should be a Justice Department investigation into the fraud, because that's a crime.
Right. Of
How
course
far does it go?
And does it go
into the CIA?
Yeah, it goes into Soros. And again, it's like...
How about all these... You mentioned Nestle. All these Soros-appointed district attorneys and attorney generals who all of us are acting in bad faith. Trump can't do this now because of his sort of schizophrenic position on the pandemic. But all the governors and attorney generals and government officials who at the state level who have implemented or enforced these lockdowns in violation of their own state constitutions and the U.S. Constitution, they're all liable for this stuff. And they've also made fake claims about pandemics, which are crimes, which is a federal crime and also a state crime. There's also fraud, because they've also mishandled money they've gotten, emergency money. Now, and this is a fantasy. This is not going to happen. But this is sort of you can see this sort of unfolding if Trump wasn't toppled in this false election. Because if, let's say, he does prevail in this, and as of now, there stands a very good chance of him prevailing. Based on the rules, Trump wins, by the way. So they got to break the rules. That's how basically what the situation is right now. That's one thing the media isn't telling people. Based on the rules, Trump wins. Is that he might, in the second term, say, okay, they tried to get me. Now, my second term, I got nothing to lose. I'm going to go after these SOBs. And it might change the dynamics. For example, sort of the state stepping up and appointing their own electors. This may start sort of an avalanche of events, which brings down the whole rotten system. The media, obviously, the media industrial complex will be discredited, and then you can go after things like the pandemic, which they've promoted. You know,
it'll automatically do that. Yeah. Automatically, you just can't. You cannot. Trump cannot go through the process that he needs to go through to remain as president without every one of those things getting triggered. And once they do, I mean, the whole rotten carcass is just going to collapse. But this means it will not happen. At least they will try to prevent it. And so where does the dramatic structure come to the conclusion? Is it with Trump being assassinated? I mean, that's certainly one of the possibilities. You know, he wins, but, you know, there is a coup. I mean, these things are actually quite logical in terms of dramatic construction, because I do think we're looking at a pageant. I think it's one that's designed to have a negative psychological effect on us. I think that kind of the pablum case, which I think is very weak drama of Biden simply prevailing and becoming president, it doesn't really work dramatically, because the middle class would see it as illegitimate, but they're certainly not going to be in the mood to take any vaccination, which I think is one of the primary, you know, goals here. I think you need to have a real civil war. I think we read a talk like tonight about the Civil War, which is kind of hard to address concretely because it's just in the process of becoming. But I think if you really look at this as a drama and not as history unfolding, the Civil War is required at some point. That's why all of these different elements have been put in place.
Well, you have agents promoting the vulgar passions that you had back in 1861, yep. And you have higher ups doing this. And if there was cognizance of this, of these malevolent forces, they could preempt it and arrested and taken out.
Things are possible, but my sense is we're headed towards civil war of some kind. It doesn't have to be enormous, but it has to be powerful enough to create a moment where Operation Warp Speed is you know, that the middle class, but particularly, are so dizzied by the events and frightened and locked down, and there's violence, you know, and this would just be something that would be a relief because they could then travel and go to Disney World, you know, if they only had their vaccine passport. So, I mean, that's just kind of how I sense it. But believe me, it's more complicated than that, Tim. But one thing for sure is the next 60 days, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, some elements might have an interest in seeing the United States break apart. That's one way to liquidate the national debt.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean,
and they're running that up. Both sides are running that up, aren't they?
Well, yeah, and then of course, in beyond all that, there's the economic reset, which is staring us right in the face. You know, the numbers of the amount of invented money that they're going to have to come up with over the next 12 months, just because, you know, to keep the food moving around without an economy is, to me, just almost insane.
Oh, yeah, I was watching a bunch of reports about possible shortages again of, like, essentials. Like, well, one way to cause a shortage is to file reports about shortages so people panic buy.
Of course. And if you have... You know, I mean, so this would be the condition, you know, that the middle class may find themselves in. They're locked down from the virus, which is epidemic. Antifa is uncontested by the non-existent police, and the food supply is now, you know, kind of wonky, and they can't get toilet paper at Costco anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So now, where are you? You know, as a people. And look, the people who are running this world, that is exactly where they want to put us, because that's on the way to zero, and that's where they want to take us. So they're going to try it, and we need to be prepared. And it's, you know, I'm a scratchy record, but organize now. Get just whatever groups you can get assembled, get them assembled now. And if you have time, not just to prepare, you know, militarily and in terms of food, but information-wise, try to be an active information source for your community. Don't be afraid. We have nothing to lose. Get out of your comfort zone. I mean, I'm like every chance I get, I'm driving like my family crazy. But if I have an opportunity to speak out, to try to get people to see the, you know, that the pandemic is not just false but malevolent, I just take it. I just go for it. I just say, you know, my policy is to insert the information and then walk away. You know, I don't try if they're going to slug me, I say, fine, you know, I've done my piece, I'm out of here. If they're interested, I just give them everything I have and then move on, and then try to have people that you know, and tell them to be bold. Because it could make a huge difference if we start to really develop organization. I think that could that would be something they wouldn't want to see.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously what happened with the election, yeah, it's a fraud, stolen. But if Trump had coasted to a 320 vote electoral victory, there wouldn't be any basis for riots. So they had to engineer this and make it close, and then steal it to inflame the passions, install, you know, the brain dead president they want, and so that's where it is now. Whether or not Trump turns out to be a wild card, something they can't deal with, that's, you know, perhaps that's what the situation is now. They want to get rid of him. He's not willing to leave. Now he's willing to fight back, and now he's gone off. That's something they can't control for the time, completely control for the time being. So the situation is indeed fluid. And I guess the next few days we'll see where this is going. It is interesting that the pressure is building towards that scenario that we talked about, which only a few days ago seemed not likely. Now it's becoming increasingly likely. In fact, as we discussed, it's probably Trump's best option to go the Electoral College route, which makes things very interesting. But okay.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Boy, oh boy, this is actually getting interesting, Tim. We'll have to see where we are next week, huh?
Yep. So, Joe, I'll let you go.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Enjoy the weekend. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.